What does membership of a theosophical society mean? This is a question which has to be posed to oneself every now and again, because one can discover as time goes on, if one is really in earnest, that there is much more meaning in the membership than we might have at first thought. I think perhaps to discover the real significance of membership in this society, one must become acquainted with its origin and its character. It had its origin in persons who felt a great concern, that is a rather weak word for what they felt, but it will do for the present. The society had its origin in persons who felt a tremendous concern for the condition of humanity. It has been called orphan humanity, and those who initiated the theosophical movement in the last century wished to do all they could to succor this orphan and to ameliorate its condition. The cause, therefore, is not a small cause, nor is it a profane cause. There can be no cause which is more significant or sacred then to bring light to this lost world of men and women. People who are lost in ignorance and in nothing else. Plato said, I shouldn't talk about Plato with an expert like René Weber in front of me, but so far as I know, Plato said that no one does anything which he considers not to be good. That is, every person who does wrong acts out of ignorance and not out of deliberate desire to do wrong. The Eastern philosophers would agree with this, that it is ignorance as to what is right and wrong, and ignorance as to what is truly beneficial to oneself as well as to others, that makes people act in ways which bring suffering in many forms. And suffering is the lot of mankind. It is only mankind, according to what is written in the Mahatma letters, which is the source of evil. Because man alone acts out of ignorance. Animals are not aware at all. They are incapable of being aware of what is right and wrong. Therefore, there is no question of ignorance in their case. A tiger which pounces on a deer is not doing wrong. It's not acting in a way which is evil, for it is innocent, not ignorant. But the human mind is capable of knowing, and therefore the condition of unknowing can be called ignorance. And ignorance is the cause of all suffering. The Theosophical Society was founded by those who felt a tremendous urge to free humanity of its suffering, which is the same thing as saying freeing it of its ignorance. And I personally feel there can be no more sacred cause than this. No greater religion, in fact, than finding the truth which can free the human mind of ignorance. The motto of the Theosophical Society, "There is no religion higher than truth," has a profound significance, because to find truth and to release the mind of its pain, its anguish, is in fact the deepest religious activity that one can be engaged in. And that is what the Theosophical Society was founded for. H.P.B. said that theosophy is a religion, not a religion, because every religion has dogmas, beliefs, it has attached to it social conventions and customs, it has a background of tradition which may have validity or lack in validity. It has its authorities, its scriptures, and so on. But religion per se has none of these things. It is the pure aspiration, the pure upward turning towards the light of truth. And the Theosophical Society is concerned with creating that kind of profound religious consciousness which can liberate the world of its sorrow. And as I said, this is perhaps the most sacred and significant of all causes. To become aware of this as a member makes one think, act, and work in a different way. We would not work in the Theosophical Society as if it were one of many societies. That is why I say it is not a profane work that we have on hand. Particularly in the present day, it would be easy to regard the society as rather commonplace, nice but commonplace. There are many nice things which are commonplace, because what was very special when the society was started is not any more so special. When they spoke in the early days of the society, for example, of karma and reincarnation, it was a radical teaching for the West. Now, you don't have to put karma in italics when you print the word because it has become part of common vocabulary. Everybody is talking about it. Unfortunately, everybody is talking about the masters in terms which denigrate what that consciousness really is. It cannot be denigrated, but I mean vulgarizing something which is extraordinarily beautiful and holy. But that sense has been lost, and the word is being bandied about, and all kinds of peculiar, unworthy notions exist in connection with so-called masters. I mentioned these two things, but you may think of other things which were rather unique to the society when it was first started, but now everybody is talking about those things, the unity of life, the one life, and so on. But the society is different. It must be different. And the difference must be in this strong, clear, and deep sense of the sacred character of the society's work, which is nothing less than the liberating of the human mind from its pain and the darkness in which it lives. And if we have that sense, then all that we do in the name of theosophy and for the Theosophical Society will have that character. There would be a loving care in whatever we do. The other day, discussing with Scott what is theosophical, we were speaking about the fact that many things can be theosophical. depending on what is the source in our being from which that action emanates. One may be a teacher or a lecturer or a housewife, but if there is a pure condition, a condition which is inwardly concerned with others, not only with those who are immediately around one, but with the universal question of human beings, then what that person does, thinks, feels, his relationships become theosophical. And they influence the world. In one of her early writings, H.P.B. mentions that because the human consciousness is one, everything that we do can help or hinder others. And we too are affected by the general condition. Mr. Krishnamurti often says this too, that the human consciousness is our consciousness. How we live, what we do affects the total consciousness. It's as if a drop of color or several drops of color were put into water. It spreads immediately and it changes the water. So what we do can be theosophical depending on our inner condition. The more there is of the I wish I could use Sanskrit words, but I can't. I was going to say non-personal, but that sounds as if there is indifference, coldness. I don't like to say compassion, because we are not yet ready to be compassionate in the real sense of the term. But the more feeling we have for which is of a universal nature, whatever we may be doing, the more it becomes theosophical. So in one's heart, one can carry a sense of the grand purpose for which the society was founded. In one of the Vedantic works, the analogy is given of a woman or a man in love. The woman may be doing many things, cooking, looking after her child, and many other things. But if she is deeply in love, that applies to a man as well, somehow that the presence, that feeling remains there all the time. It's burning inside like a light, and it's never forgotten whatever else she may be doing. Her outer mind is working at those things, and perhaps working with a feeling of delicacy, with a feeling of joy, with a sense of sacredness, if I might use that word, because of the very fact that there is this experience of love inside. So the two can go together, but everything that the individual does is illumined by the warmth of this field. The whole world looks differently, and if we have a sense of the profound and bound worldwide cause, which is that of the Theosophical Society, then that will touch with a quality of grace and beauty all that we do, whether it is lodge work or meeting an inquirer, talking to a friend, living in a family, carrying on a profession, whatever it is. It will be like the woman in love who lights up, who finds everything lighted up by that fact, that realization. So to be a member of the Theosophical Society means to carry this lamp within, the lamp of the cause, which is the cause of humanity. We may not feel powerful enough to do a grand work for the whole of humanity. It's unnecessary to be ambitious. We may be working where we are, but that work will be fired by the concern for a much greater thing. I think that sense of universality is very important as a part of our membership. Universality is not merely a question of not thinking of somebody else as yellow or black or white, as Hindu or Christian and all that. It is that, but it is much more than that. And I think this is an important aspect of the society's work. And if we are aware that the work is so large, its boundaries are not limited, and that it is of an extraordinarily significant thing, then out of that sense of the wideness, the loftiness, the trueness of the work comes a sense also of anonymity. I think it is important to be anonymous. One cannot really be a theosophist unless one is willing to forgo the desire to be a person of distinction. I have a beautiful saying of the Buddha somewhere in the back of my mind on this subject, but I can't recall the exact words. But if we read the letters of the elder brethren to Mr. Sinnett, one of the most touching aspects, touching things about those letters is the great humility that they manifest. The elder brethren are incapable of being hypocritical, of saying things because they are the conventional things to say. There are many passages where they speak against hypocrisy in any form, but you find them writing and subscribing to the letter as your humble servant. I am sure that literally that is what they meant, because they are the humble servants. They have been always of all men, women, in fact all life, and there are no exceptions. Every individual whom they tried to help was someone whom they served. And that spirit of simplicity, of anonymity, not claiming anything, is so very striking if one reads those letters. I think we can get a great deal by an acquaintance with the history of the society, not in order to learn dates, figures and facts and find out what faults were committed by whom. That is one way of studying history. But the other way is to see how people lived so that they were able to convey the sense of inspiration. And people have come into the society for many reasons. Sometimes because it helped a person who suffered some sorrow, some loss. Sometimes because companionship of a certain kind was found within the society. There are numerous reasons for coming into the society. But the society itself has succeeded, has given an impetus to the world, not because of those who came seeking consolation, although they too have a part in the society, but because of the sacrifices that many have made. And these sacrifices can be studied if we study the history of the society. The sacrifices made by the founders. 2 years ago, they celebrated in India the anniversary of the founders landing in India in 1879. They traveled all over India in an incredible way, in bullock carts. I wonder if we would be prepared now to travel in vehicles which are comparatively more comfortable, like jeeps. Probably we would find them too uncomfortable and we would give up the task. But they traveled in bullock carts which had hard wheels and no springs probably. I've been to interior towns in India where Colonel Olcott lectured, and everywhere where he lectured, where Madame Blavatsky went, theosophical lodges sprang up like mushrooms. All those lodges were created through the sacrifice of these people, sacrifice of their honor, of positions which they could have had in the world, family connections, many types of satisfactions, all were abandoned, and they worked without seeking
fame, appreciation, recognition, nothing. And that was true of Annie Besant and of so many others. So, how can we work or learn to work in the society without seeking recognition, abandoning all the things that normally attract people to do work? In the ancient days, there were many artists who created great works of art without putting their names to them. So today, people look at these works of art in amazement, not knowing who created them. What a wonderful attitude that was. The beauty mattered, not one's unimportant self. And working in the Theosophical Society is really like that. If the cause is important, then the person cannot be important. And all the petty differences which arise because the person is important will disappear. We tend to quarrel sometimes, even though we are theosophists. Let us accept that fact. There are frictions, but those frictions can be minor things if we remember the major thing, the great thing. The more we fill our minds with things of universal importance, the less time, energy, attention we will have for the petty little things which provoke differences and disputes. And the sense of brotherhood can grow through this, because what we share together is much more important, much more significant than the small things which separate us. So we can work in a spirit of abandoning our own prejudices, our own likes and dislikes, our personal preferences, in a spirit of anonymity and not in a spirit of pride. During the summer school, the word responsibility was brought to our attention. The Dalai Lama, in his talk, said a striking thing, that every individual is responsible for all of humanity, for all of mankind. This is not a terrible burden which is put on our shoulders. Responsibility, when it goes with affection and something which we really like to do, is not a burden. It is an entirely different thing. I'm sure all of you must have heard the story about the little girl carrying her brother, big boy, and being asked, "Is he not too heavy for you to carry?" And she replied, "He is my brother. So if he is a brother, he cannot be a heavy weight to carry." And if this whole work is something which has awakened our, created a light in our consciousness, awakened our sense of responsibility, then it is not a burdensome thing, but it is an arduous thing. Responsibility means that we have to do a great deal of work in order to find out how to work. It is not easy to know what can save the human mind from ignorance. We may think that we know. That would be a really disastrous attitude. Let us think of a classroom. There is so much talk about how we can bring theosophy to people, what methods we should adopt, what type of publicity we should do, and so on. But all that is relatively unimportant. What is important is that we should ourselves be all the time inquiring and learning. In a classroom, a teacher is successful. I am again talking perhaps of things I do not know, but which I think I know. I've never been a teacher, but I believe a teacher is successful because when he is himself constantly learning and he is alive with that learning, inquiring, and he communicates that spirit of inquiry and of learning to his students. And that is much more important than putting information in the way of the student. If the student is intelligent and has the zeal to know and find out, he will find out for himself. Nobody needs to teach him. So I believe the successful teacher is one who is learning, and the bore is one who thinks he knows and goes on repeating what he knows. It's a dreadful kind of teaching which perhaps some of us have experienced. But the same may hold good, I believe it does, in the Theosophical Society. If we want really to bring theosophy to others, then the work of finding out what is theosophy, what is truth, and that is an enormous question which covers everything else. What is the way to help the world, to help the human mind to be free? These questions are constantly being explored. So it is only the one who is inquiring, who has the spirit of inquiry, who can really bring theosophy. He doesn't have to bring theosophy. It's only to communicate that spirit of learning and of inquiring, and each one will discover theosophy for himself. More than once, Madame Blavatsky has spoken about the importance of freeing the mind of what it has inherited through its education, its heredity, its environment, and trying to probe into truth with a free mind, unprejudiced. I think there is no point in finding quotations. I can find quotations for you, but it's not who said it which is important, but the intrinsic validity of a thing. The Lord Buddha said, don't believe something because I say it, because tradition says it, because the scriptures say it. Inquire and find out whether it is true. And the theosophist is one who is engaged in the search for truth, in free and fearless investigation, and thereby qualifies himself to help others by virtue of the keenness of his mind, his concern for humanity, his universality, selflessness, and so on. I would like, last of all, to mention one thing. Membership of the Theosophical Society means so many things. One can't possibly deal with all of them in any talk. But there is one thing which follows upon what we said, that we have to learn to be self-reliant. The so-called religions of the world have enslaved the human mind, which therefore made the Mahatmas call these sort of religions a kind of bane upon earth. I'm not using their word, but you will find something equally strong. They made people dependent on a so-called God, dependent on clergy, on gurus, dependent on the words in scriptures. But we know, or should know as theosophists, that there is only one light, and that is the light of one's own consciousness or intelligence. If the consciousness is not in a condition to see the greatest mysteries, even the mysteries of the gala may be present before the eyes, but they will not be perceived. Each person can see only what he is capable of seeing. The insensitive consciousness sees very little. The consciousness which is awake sees a great deal. By see, we are not referring only to material things, but to the intangible, subtle parts of existence. So, only one's own consciousness can be a light, nothing else. And one has to depend on oneself to see. No guru, no scripture, no church, no God can make us see if our eyes do not have clarity. The inner eye does not have clarity. So, as members of the society, we have to be engaged in clarifying, purifying the vision. And we must study what it is that obscures the sight. Prejudice, passion, there are many things which obscure the sight. This self in its innumerable forms is a veil upon the vision. And so there is the work of creating from within the, not creating, evoking from within the capacity to see and to understand. It means to learn to stand on one's own feet. In life, there are many things which help. We cannot reject help. Someone who is wiser can certainly help. Someone who is more experienced can help. Perhaps foolish people can also help. Again, to quote the Dalai Lama, the enemy helps by teaching one various things, it reminds one of what is said in Light on the Path: no man is your enemy, no man is your friend, all alike are your teachers. But as Mr. Krishnamurti says, why do we think that only a guru, a teacher, particular things can help? All the world can help, because there is a hidden meaning in all that exists. The leaf that floats down from the tree, the wind as it blows upon the branches, the light of the stars, all things are guides, all things bring a message. If only the mind is open and the heart is sensitive, then everywhere there is help. Karma is not the law of punishment, but karma is the greatest teacher. And karma comes not only in the moments of crisis, but every moment in the here and now is what has been brought by that marvelous teacher of teachers, which is karma. So at every moment there is something which can be learnt by he who desires to learn. And that must be someone who finds that the source of all light is in himself and not in another. So to learn to become self-reliant, which is not the same thing as being self-opinionated, obstinate, domineering, etc., but to be conscious, to realize that in oneself is the light, is very, very important for members of the society. It is really a wonderful society, because it gives one so much freedom, freedom to grow, freedom to be. And we must make use of that freedom, learn to use it in the right way. That is the whole problem of humanity. Humanity is endowed with freedom and has to learn to use that freedom rightly. We may make many mistakes, it does not matter, but it is the sincerity, the commitment, if you like to use that word, which matters. When W.Q. Judge, it was, I think, wrote a letter to Damodar Mavlankar, because he was feeling very depressed and didn't know what to do. Damodar wrote to him and said that a child which is learning to walk falls down many times, but it doesn't give up. It may get hurt and cry, but every time it picks itself up. And a time comes when the mother may offer the child her little finger, but the child refuses to accept that finger and wants to toddle on till its feet become strong, because that impulse to depend upon itself is in that child. And the spiritual child, who we are all, I hope, as theosophists, like that, we have to be like that. Pick ourselves up and come to a stage when we don't want crutches, and where we learn to walk and use our freedom rightly.